Kaligam Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Prabhupada, Prabhupada, Prabhupada Jaya, Prabhupada Jaya. Prabhupada Jaya, Prabhupada Jaya, Prabhupada Jaya. Now, Shri Prabhupada Ki Jaya. Namacharya Hari Das Thakur Ki Jaya. Rams go, Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Sri Advaita Gadadhara, Shri Gaur Bhakta Vrindiki Jai, Sri Sri Radha Krishna, Gopagopita, Shama Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Gopratan Ki Jai, Sri Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai, Navadvip Dham Ki Jai, Ganga Jamuna Tulsi Bhakti Devi Ki Jai, Ananda Koti Vaishnava Vrindiki Jai, Samadetta Bhakta Vrindiki Jai, Gopratanandi, all glories to some of the devotees, all glories to some of the devotees. All glories to some of the devotees, all glories to Sri Guru and Sri Guranga, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Stai Bhutale Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namani Namaste Sarasvati Devi Gauravani Pacharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschate Deshatarane Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasri Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam Canto 10 Chapter 70 verse 45. Sri Sukha Uvacha. Tatateshatma Pakshesu. Agranatsa Vijigisaya. Vacha Peshaksmayan Vrityam. Udavam Praha Keshava. Sri Sukha Uvacha. Sukadeva Goswami said, tatra, their teshu, they, atma, his own, bakshesu, supporters, agranatsu, not agreeing, vijigishaya, because of their desire to conquer, vacha, speech, peshai, with charming usage, smayan, smiling, vrityam, to his servant, Uddhavam, Sri Uddhava, Praha, spoke, Keshava, Lord Krishna. Translation, Sukadeva Goswami said, when his supporters, the Yadavas, objected to this proposal out of eagerness to defeat Jarasandha, Lord Keshava turned to his servant Uddhava and smiling addressed him with fine words. Purport, Srila Prabhupada explains, just before the great sage Narada arrived in the Sudharma assembly of Dwarka, Lord Krishna and his ministers and secretaries had been considering how to attack the kingdom of Jarasandha. Because they were seriously considering this subject, Narada's proposal that Lord Krishna go to Hastinapur for Maharaj Yudhisthira's great Rajasuya sacrifice did not much appeal to them. Lord Krishna could understand the intentions of his associates because he is the ruler of even Lord Brahma. Therefore, in order to pacify them, he smilingly spoke to Uddhava. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti points out that the Lord smiled because he was about to demonstrate Uddhava's brilliant ability to give counsel in difficult situations. Translation, the personality of Godhead said, you're indeed our best eye and closest friend, for you know perfectly the relative value of various kinds of counsel. Therefore, please tell us what should be done in this situation. We trust your judgment and shall do as you say. Sukadeva Goswami continued, thus requested by his master, who, though omniscient, acted as if perplexed, Uddhava took this order upon his head and replied as follows. Thus end the purports of the humble servants of his divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, to the 10th canto, 70th chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Lord Krishna's Daily Activities. So here we have the end of the proposal of Narada that Rajasuya sacrifice be held by Yudhisthira and Krishna attend. And here we have the Yadus in Dwarka protesting that they should kill Jarasandha instead. So that's the basic controversy, whether to go to the Rajasuya sacrifice or kill Jarasandha. So here we find that the Supreme Lord goes, he asks Uddhava what to do. So Uddhava has a very important role to play in Dwarka. He's quite prominent. And even before Dwarka, he was prominent. In Mathura, he was also prominent. And that is shown by the fact that Krishna sent him to deliver a message to the gopis, to tell them that he was coming back later. So in relation to that, there's often a whole description of Uddhava's qualification. And he was most dear to Krishna, and Krishna himself says, you are myself, etc., in many places. And he was very intelligent. He was also learned. He was the disciple of Brihaspati, who was the priest of the Devatas and considered very learned. And he was an intimate minister of Krishna in Mathura and in Dwarka, which meant that he could give advice in all sorts of situations. So he was particularly good at solving problems that looked very difficult to solve. And therefore, he was entrusted with a lot of work by Krishna. Additionally, he was so close to Krishna that he almost looked like Krishna. So when he came to Vrindavan, the gopis thought it was Krishna, because he was wearing Krishna's lotus garland, and they thought, "Oh, Krishna's come back." So he was very—he was a cousin, actually. So he looked very similar to Krishna, and he understood the mood of Vrindavan. So that is why Krishna sent him back there. He understood that Uddhava could appreciate the love that the people of Vrindavan had for him. So he entrusted him with this very intimate service of going and delivering a message to the gopis and consoling Yasoda and Nanda. Later we find also that in the Gopal Champu, that he also brings Uddhava back to Vrindavan with him when he returns on several occasions. And Uddhava is allowed to go to Vrindavan and also be in Dwarka, just like Krishna goes to Vrindavan from Dwarka. So Uddhava also has that same ability because of his appreciation of the people of Vrindavan. And when in Dwarka also, he is able to explain to everyone how Krishna is separated from the people of Vrindavan and how the people there suffer and how Krishna suffers because of that. So you can understand Krishna's separation while he's in Dwarka. And you can explain that to other people. So, in other words, Uddhava understood Krishna's mentality very well, not only in terms of political situation in Dwarka, etc., but also in terms of rasa and Krishna's separation from the people of Vrindavan and particularly the gopis. So he could even appreciate the Madhurya rasa of Krishna, even though he was actually in Dasya rasa. So therefore, Krishna entrusted him with a lot of his work. So here we see one example of that. There is a problem of or disagreement, we say, because Narada is saying go to the Rajasuya sacrifice, and the Yadus are saying no, you have to kill Jarasandha. So what should be done? So then Krishna calls upon Uddhava to give a solution to the problem, because one, he's a friend, and two, he knows a lot, so he can give good advice. So he has very great faith in Uddhava. Now, of course, Krishna is the most intelligent. And it is Krishna who gives intelligence to everybody else. So why can't Krishna just solve the problem himself? That's true, he can do that. But as we see, he could also kill all the people in the battle of Kurukshetra, but he has the Pandavas do it, and Arjuna do it, etc. So he likes to engage his devotees in different services. So this creates pastimes. Because the Lord is completely independent, he doesn't need any pastimes. Everything's already solved. He's completely blissful. But he expands that bliss through pastimes with devotees, and that gives him greater bliss. Now, to do that, then he also has to appear to be ignorant. So here he cannot solve the problem, so he asks Uddhava what to do, as if he were ignorant, even though he is knowledgeable of everything. But the Lord is saying, oh, you are the knower of all truth and you're the best minister, etc., so you can give me good advice. There is an appearance of ignorance on the part of Krishna, who is the Supreme Lord. So this again is an aspect of pastimes. We can say maybe he's pretending like this to glorify Uddhava. On the other hand, within the pastimes itself, there is yoga maya operates in such a way that even Krishna becomes ignorant. So that sounds strange, but nevertheless, we see examples of that, that Krishna somehow becomes overcome by the situation. And this is the yoga maya shakti working to hide things even from Krishna. So we see that examples of that, how for instance, when the Agasura appeared and opened his mouth in Vrindavan, and then all the cowherd boys were saying, "Oh, this looks like a big cave, let's go into the cave." And they all began running into the cave with the calves. And Krishna was astonished, and he wanted to call, "Come back, come back." But they were already running into the mouth of the Agasura demon. And he was like helpless. He couldn't do anything. So then he was thinking, "Oh, this is very strange." And then he realized, "Oh, the Leela Shakti is working like this." So even I cannot stop these people. I cannot tell them anything. Even though cowherd boys listen to Krishna, etc. But in this case, suddenly he realized, "Oh, Leela Shakti is doing this." So they run into the mouth and I can't control them. So in this way, the Leela Shakti and other Yoga Maya Shakti and other Shaktis work not just on the order of Krishna, consciously saying, "Oh, the Shakti, do this, do that," but rather spontaneously do all these things. And even Krishna gets surprised by what's happening. Even though he is all knowledgeable, knows everything, etc., he gets surprised by how his Shaktis are doing things and arranging things. So therefore, it's not just that Krishna pretends to be ignorant, or Krishna pretends this or that, whatever. He becomes part of those pastimes and becomes subject to the same Shaktis. Ultimately, of course, the Shaktis are under his control and they're always acting simply to increase the bliss of the pastimes. That's their whole purpose. So in no way is there some mistake in the arrangement of the Shaktis or an arrangement of Krishna doing something. It all works out so that more bliss is created. So therefore, there is ignorance in the spiritual world and there's ignorance in the material world. But it is very different. The ignorance of the material world is ignorance of Krishna and ignorance of our own identity as jiva and our position relationship with the Lord. And that gives rise to material bodies, karma, suffering, etc. So that ignorance is condemned in scriptures. Ignorance in the spiritual world is the opposite. Does not cause bondage. It produces more service to Krishna on part of the devotees. It produces more bliss and pastimes for the devotees and the Supreme Lord. So in other words, that ignorance in the spiritual world is simply a servant of Krishna and operates to increase the bliss of the spiritual world. And never creates an ignorance which will make us lose consciousness of our identity as the servant of Krishna. Rather, does the opposite. It increases our realization of our servitude to the Supreme Lord. So therefore, such things exist in the material world, in the spiritual world, but they are quite different. And the same we can say about rasa. Material world is full of rasa, but it is a cause of karma, cause of suffering. Spiritual world, rasa is the cause of bliss. So we got everything in the material world, everything in the spiritual world. Some people say, "Well, how can envy exist in the spiritual world?" Well, yes, we do have envy there also. Matsarya, the gopis are envious of each other. Chandravali and Radharani are envious of each other sometimes. So this is a type of envy. But that is simply a byproduct of their love of Madhurya Stai Baba. And it adds to the bliss of the pastimes. That's all. So it's not like the envy of the material world, which is a product of our ignorance and creates sinful activities and karma and suffering. So, therefore, spiritual world is full of varieties of things. And this may be bewildering for some people, because how can be like that in the spiritual world? How they can have ignorance, how they can have attachments, how Krishna can steal, whatever like this. But quite different from what happens in the material world. It's all based upon attraction to the Supreme Lord and service to the Supreme Lord. So therefore, instead of being bad activities and bad qualities, everything becomes good qualities and good activities in service to Krishna. So here Krishna acts as if ignorant, and this gives an opportunity for Uddhava to show his intelligence in the situation and satisfy all parties. On the one side we have the Yadus, who are acting on behalf of Krishna. They're trying to serve Krishna, so they think that we have to kill Jarasandha, who was the big enemy at the time. So they're acting on behalf of the Lord. And here we have Narada Muni representing Yudhisthira Maharaj and encouraging Krishna to attend the Rajasuya sacrifice. So that also, the motivation of Yudhisthira is to glorify Krishna. He's only serving Krishna. But looks quite different. One is an attempt to kill the enemy. The other has nothing to do with killing the enemy at all. It's just the glorification of Krishna. So then Krishna has to choose. It looks like one or the other. Which one should I do? Kill Jarasandha or go to the Rajasuya sacrifice? And if he goes to the Rajasuya sacrifice, fine. But then Jarasandha is still at large, and he's a danger. If he goes to the kills Jarasandha, then Yudhisthira will be disappointed. He disappoints his devotee. So either way, someone's dissatisfied. The Yadus are dissatisfied if he doesn't kill Jarasandha, and Yudhisthira's dissatisfied if he doesn't go to the Rajasuya sacrifice. His effort will be useless because he wants Krishna there to point him out as Swayam Bhagavan. So this is, we could say, a perplexity not only in the political situation, but also which devotee to please first. Can I have to do this for them, or I have to do this for Yudhisthira? So such are the situations that will arise in the spiritual world also, because there's so many different devotees, and which activity to do first. So it looks a little perplexing. So it requires some good intelligence to solve the situation. So Uddhava can do this, solve the problem, not only by a suggestion, but the way he speaks. He speaks in a very pleasing manner. He's a very good speaker. He can use words nicely and convince people nicely. So his idea is one thing, and how he presents it is another thing, which is very convincing. So that combination satisfies everybody. He speaks in such a way that everyone feels that their desires will be fulfilled. So the Yadus will have their desires fulfilled, and Yudhisthira will have his desires fulfilled. Of course, it means that he will have to choose one or the other activity first. Nevertheless, ultimately, both will be satisfying. And so, therefore, this is the situation that Uddhava must solve. And Krishna has given him the task in order to illustrate the qualities of Uddhava, his great wisdom and his understanding of the whole situation. At the same time, his great understanding of prema, and how the Yadu should be satisfied, and how Yudhisthira should be satisfied. Additionally, it also is an opportunity for Krishna to glorify Uddhava, to show his great intimacy with Uddhava, that he will give him the chance to solve the problem. In this way, he becomes the instrument of fulfilling Krishna's will. Just as in the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna becomes the instrument of fulfilling the will of Krishna. So here, by agreeing to give his advice, then he becomes the instrument of Krishna giving good advice to everyone and solving the problem. Almost, within the spiritual world, the Shaktis work. For instance, another example is when Krishna swallowed the dirt and the cowherd boys complained to Mother Yasoda, and then she went to Krishna and started chastising him, and then she told him to open his mouth because she didn't believe him. So then Krishna opened his mouth. But he didn't have to do anything. His Aishwarya Shakti manifested the universe within him without even Krishna doing anything. So spontaneously the Shaktis just do this. Ultimately we say that's under Krishna's control, yes, but they act in such a way that it's so spontaneous that Krishna doesn't even have to think about it. So they're very eager to serve the Lord. The Shaktis are eager to serve the Lord for his pastimes. So they start doing all these different arrangements automatically. Yeah, in order that Krishna go in the mouth, kill Agasura, and liberate him. And then this led to the pastime of Brahma coming down. So in other words, it was a whole arrangement to produce the, not only liberate Agasura, which was also very astonishing for everybody, but also to carry on to the next pastime of Brahma's bewilderment, etc. So the arrangement of the Leela Shakti is for that purpose.
Mm-hmm. So here you see, Lord is taking advice from Jiva. He's also for the past kept.
Yeah. He does that in many places. He takes advice from his devotees or whatever like that. Ask them what to do, whatever. This is not the only case, but many cases he'll do that. Obviously Krishna knows everything, but he's acting in this way. It's part of the pastime and glorifying the devotees, etc.
Like giving service to the devotees, but he wants to hear what the devotees has in his heart.
Yeah, and it's also, let's say, it's like an exchange in itself, a pastime. If since Krishna knows everything and he can do everything, why does he need the devotees at all? He can internally just have his own pastimes and, okay, forget about you. Just standing there doing nothing.
He's aware and he knows everything.
In one hand he does, in one hand he doesn't. So he's not just imitating, oh, I know everything, but I'm just going to give him a chance to display power and I'll look back and see, okay, in one sense, no, he does forget. And like when he's chased by Mother Yasoda and then she catches him and then he has tears in his eyes. Are they fake tears? Because Krishna is the controller of everybody and nobody can punish Krishna and he feels no pain at all. So why is he crying? Are they fake tears? No, actual tears. He's also afraid, like that, in one sense. But it's not material. It's in terms of rasa. So in rasa we have these different things like fear and anger and so many different things. But that's within the spiritual rasa and it's not under illusion.
Normally materialist person might misunderstand this kind of
thing. Yeah, and that's why, particularly with Krishna, difficult to understand him. and people mistake and they'll criticize. So, why is Krishna doing that? Why is he doing this? He's like a material person. Huh? How can anyone tie up the Supreme Lord?
Maharaj, in the 7th chapter, Krishna is saying, Ichha Dvesha Samudaya. Dvesha is one reason why we are in the material world.
Yeah.
And then now there is Dvesha also in the spiritual world. Although the objective probably is different.
Yeah. The Ichha and Dvesha of the material world arise from ignorance. We have ignorance of the Supreme Lord, and we think of ourselves as independent, and then we desire different things in the material world, and when we get obstructed, then we have the dvesha. So we get ishta dvesha in that way. In the spiritual world, obviously, there must be desire. Krishna has desire, and the jivas there have a desire also. But their desire is to please the Lord. That's their primary desire, please the Lord. So desire is there automatically. And then the opposite comes about when there's an obstruction to that desire. So that is why the gopis compete with each other and one obstructs the other. So then they have that dvesha operating there. But that is in terms of rasa. There's secondary temporary manifestations which give a little taste to the primary rasa of the devotee.
Maharaj, also in devotees there's this idea that das, das, and das, that we are servant of the servant of the servant. But here we see that there is a Yadavas want something and Pandavas are wanting something, and then we have those kings arrested. So they're all devotees, but the consideration is in terms of Yadavas, the consideration is not okay. Pandavas are more exalted devotees, so you know their request has come. So why don't we fulfill that first?
Well, it's all, of course, service to the Lord. It's just a matter of which service Krishna should do first, that's all. So that's where the conflict comes, who to serve first, which is perplexing for Krishna also. Who should I satisfy first? Both are bona fide things. The Yadus are not thinking of themselves. They're thinking of Krishna himself, that he should kill Jarasandha because it's a danger to him also. So... therefore, it's just a matter of which devotee to satisfy first. And in spiritual pastimes, that becomes a little perplexing, who to satisfy. Just as with in Krishna's pastimes, should I satisfy Chandravali or Radharani? And then he has to choose. Sometimes he chooses Chandravali and then Radha gets angry. He chooses Radha, then Chandravali gets angry. So it's different pastimes that result from each sort of choice.
Maharaj, in terms of devotees, is there any lesson that we learn from this? I mean, when we come across and there is service to devotees?
Well, yeah, there's many various services, and if they're all directed to the Supreme Lord for his pleasure, then they're all equal in one sense. But at the same time, one may take precedence according to the particular situation, as in this case also, as explained by Uddhava later. In order to do this, we have to do this first. So the order may be different. It doesn't mean one is better than the other, but this, in terms of the pastime itself, then one should be done first in order that the second can take place in a better manner. So similarly, sometimes if there are various services, then we may have to do one first rather than the other for some practical reasons. Well, if he reaches the stage of bhava and prema, then he experiences rasa. Before that, it's not there because the contamination is still there and the bhakti is not strong enough. So it requires presence of the Lord to have the rasa, because you have to interact with the Lord. So the first presence of the Lord is in bhava, where you can see the Lord personally. So before that, we don't see the Lord. So therefore, the rasa is not developed. Secondarily, we can do it in a sense through deities or whatever like that. But even then, we don't realize the deity fully at that point. But in bhava, then, even the deity becomes personal. as well.
How to know and distinguish between happiness and bliss? He can just how to experience it? How to know is it that real bliss or happiness? He may speculate, oh, I'm getting bliss from this.
They mean happiness. You mean happiness being material? How to distinguish from material happiness and spiritual happiness?
Somebody said, oh, I was chanting today, I'm very blessed.
Okay. Yeah. Well, we don't call it bliss technically. We can call it spiritual happiness or satisfaction. So that is there automatically with the performance of bhakti and nectar devotion. Rupa Goswami says, you know, there's Subhada and Kleshagni, first two qualities of bhakti that appear in sadhana bhakti, just destruction of kleshas, suffering, etc., and karmas, and manifestation of good qualities, or subha. And so one explanation of subha is happiness. So bhakti gives happiness. But it is not the happiness of karma yoga, which is material assets and all that. It's not the happiness of liberation also, because the devotee also rejects that. But there is a happiness that comes out of performance of bhakti. But we don't call it ananda or bliss, because that is when that term is used when we see Krishna and we directly serve him. Then we call that the ananda. So therefore we don't call it ananda, but we say it's a bhakti sukha before that.
Is there any external symptom like in material world? We say the face is index of mind. When you see a person, oh, he looks very happy. But he may be unhappy inside his mind. He may externally cause his happy.
Yeah.
What are the symptoms in your spiritual life? The word it looks happiness. Oh. That also.
Well, I think externally we may not know. And even for Abhava or Prem Bhakta, it may be difficult to understand. So therefore it is said that you cannot really describe the activities or qualities of the Prem Bhakta, because external symptoms are not always visible. So it is also said that in order to understand, one needs another devotee of great advancement to be able to detect it, because he can appreciate their internal symptoms by a few external symptoms. Of course, in the Nectar Devotion, Rupa Goswami does give a little list for Bhav Bhaktas. They're detached from material things, they're attached to chanting, attached to living in the Dham, they have great eagerness to attain the Lord, like this. See, so he gives like some qualities there. But it's not an exhaustive list also.
You see that the nature of Radharani and Chandramani, completely opposite nature. And if sometimes Krishna doesn't go to Radharani, Radharani becomes angry, but Chandramani doesn't, he tolerates it. So what to take less from him, you know, because the devotee should follow here Radharani and Chandramani.
Well, that's a preference. You could, as a jiva, we could, if we choose Madhurya Rasa, then we could choose any group. There's Chandravali's group, there's Radha's group, there's other groups also, neutral groups, other groups that are favorable to Radha, other groups that are favorable to Chandravali's group, like that. There's many, many different groups. So in Ujjwala Nilamani, it's described, there's all sorts of different gopis with different personalities. So technically, one could choose any of these and follow after them, but in our sampradaya we follow after Radha because she's the topmost gopi and has the topmost bliss. Well, if one's on that spiritual level, in a material level it may be just material anger.